Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhar Swami. Someone like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's this?
Gail.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you. Reading from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Chapter 2, part 2, practice, text 49. Tasmin sati svasa svasvasyo gati vicheda panayama. When that asana is accomplished, pranayama breath control follows. This consists of the regulation of the ingoing and outgoing breath. Om Jnana Timuram Dasya Jnana Jana Shalakaya Daksu Namitam Jena Tajmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Karubhyascha Vipashindu Vayedhucha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasa Vigor Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. Returned, 35 o'clock this morning. Govardhan Lal picked me up. I haven't rested. When I got back, I just rested a little bit at the very beginning, but since then I haven't rested. So the class may be a little bit shorter today. We'll see. I had a wonderful stay in Vrindavan. Helping all varieties of people to experience the holy Dham. That's very important to me because the mind is made of attachments. There are good attachments and there are bad attachments. Good attachments are attachments for things that move the mind to a higher mode of peacefulness and discrimination. And bad attachments are those things that lead the mind to a less conducive mode of peacefulness and perception and a more degraded mode of uncontrolled anxiety and depression. So, I think in people's spiritual life, visiting the Holy Dham under the right guidance is one of the most powerful ways to get not only favorable impressions, but deep favorable impressions within the consciousness. And I've experienced that people have had these experiences, then in times of trouble, as different tests come, at different disappointments come, as different distractions come, it may be one of the most prominent impressions in the mind that maintains their hope and aspirations in spiritual life. So I'm dedicated to that service, but as of now, there are more people that coming to the Dham that require guidance than I'm able to possibly do myself, at least those that are approaching me. But somehow it seems to work out. I took some nice ladies down the Dham, one from New York, one from some kinship of Krishna blood, someone. Somehow met someone, did kirtan at the studio, and she came with a friend of hers from Tennessee, and they really appreciated that seeds were planted in their consciousness that opened up doors of realization to them. So I was very happy with that. So in the practice to what? The practice to come to the platform of yoga when you're able to suppress the thought and therefore accelerate the move of the mind to goodness. So Patanjali describes, we finish the section on yam and niyam, rules and regulations. And I think last week we finished the section on asana, posture, and now we're up to the section of pranayama. It will be evident from the verses and the commentaries that it's a ladder. And in the ladder, you can't go to one step until you've placed your foot firmly on the preceding one. So this is a little bit different than what the modern conception of yoga is, devoid of its objective, which is real meditation, where it becomes either social or just physical. And there's no stress on the yams and niyams. That's not Patanjali. Excuse me, I keep on yawning. That's because I've been up. Sorry. Anyway, so let's just review the asana part. He describes that the posture should be attained by relaxation of effort. Posture should be steady and comfortable. Well, first, before going into that briefly, just a reminder that the asana is 1% of the words in the Yoga Sutras are dedicated to asana. Of course, it's not irrelevant, in the sense that it's a sutra, and a sutra assumes that the subject matter is not limited to the number of words that's used, but the full meaning is unpacked by the reader in conjunction with the guide. But still, the disparity between the conception of yoga today and the prominence asana holds. And the prominence that asana holds in the yoga practice of meditational yoga is a great disparity, that's obvious. So here, the first quality that was mentioned is comfortable, sukha, and steady. For the purpose is meditation. And therefore, you can achieve yoga without asana. It's not recommended. We certainly have the examples of Shishupal, who was able to fix on the object, on a single object of meditation, which was Krishna, just by strong emotional feelings, in this case, enmity or hate. But the point is clear that asana and posture is a not the goal. It's the facilitated goal, which can ultimately be achieved without it. And then the next verse was discussed very interesting about relaxation. Such a posture should be attained by the relaxation of effort and by absorption in infinite. So here, relaxing of effort means what's going to be stressed in this posture, that it's so clear that the whole purpose of it is to make one unaware of the body, because you, as you know, whenever you're sick, you're tired. You know, sometimes you see a devotee chanting and he tries to crack his own neck or twist his own back or her back. And that means that one's energy is being dissipated. That's why even higher yogis may, not optional, but sometimes they like to chant silently. They don't want any energy or effort to go into anything except that meditational focus. And therefore, to do that, they keep the body very, very fit, which when the body is fit and healthy, you don't think of it. But relaxation of effort, because initially the effort is very painful. Without pain, there's no gain. So initially there is. But then there's a result. And the result is meditating. Should be attained. And by absorption in the infinite. The infinite is ananta. This is also because as Ananta is, as Seshadeva is holding up the universes, therefore our posture in that same effortless way should hold up our consciousness on the infinite, on Ananta the infinite. Or the meditating on the infinite could possibly be interpreted as our gratitude to Patanjali himself, because Pat means fallen, Anjali means worship. It's the name for Seshadev, who fell on earth in the celestial realms into the palm. Anjali is a virtuous woman named Gorika. So, followers of Patanjali consider him the incarnation of Seshadev. And from this, one is not afflicted by opposites. The body becomes so subtle and relaxed that one no longer feels heat and cold. So you can realize what an arduous process and training this was. Now we come to the point, it says, when that asana is accomplished, pranayama breath control follows. This consists of the regulation of the incoming and outgoing breath. So this is the verse we did. Tasman siti, that attain. So it means when you attain asana, then when that is attained, then pranayama comes, or the concentration on pranayama comes. Or you could do them simultaneously, but the pranayama is dependent on asana. It's dependent on the proper relaxed steady posture. So this is very important where it says here, tasmatsati, it is attained, means that when this is attained, then this takes place. So it indicates that the preceding step is necessary for the one following it, and therefore the higher goals of yoga cannot be attained until one quells the mind by yam and niyam. I mean, just think of the first yam, the first moral restraint is nonviolence. But why is one violent? One is violent because he has that material consciousness, the fruit of consciousness, the desire to dominate, the desire to be better than others. The ichidvesha samutena dvandvamena mohena bharata, the dualities of desire and hate that we come into this world from. So that's the core and basis of our identification with the body and mind. Of course, it gets subtler and subtler, but unless we take care of those gross, then how can we proceed further? How can you be a yogi when you're violent? It's not possible. When you hate, it's not possible. So, tasmin siti, when this is attained, then the other process starts. And it describes, what is this pranayama? It's the regulation of birth, of breath. So it says both incoming and outgoing breaths. So it describes three types of pranayama. Pranayama is the cessation of breath. It's the breathing, but here it says it's not just the breathing. In fact, it's more the cessation of breath. So the yogi breathes outward, that's rechika, and then he holds his breath. He breathes inward, and then he holds his breath. That's yoga. The suspension of breath. So there's rechika, where breath is suspended. After exhalation, and then there's puraka, where breath is suspended after swasa or inhalation, and then kumbhaka, the simultaneous suspension of both breaths. So obviously there was a lot more elaborated, especially there's a 14th century yoga manual named Hatha Yoga Pradipika, where very elaborate description, I guess, is there a little bit more elaborate description of the practice of pranayama,
which properly is a very powerful tool to control the vrittis of the mind, which is the purpose of yoga. I'm really inspired after reading this that I'll do a little pranayama tomorrow morning, because it explains here. So without this extension of mind, which is best actualized at this beginning level of yoga in one sense, by this suspension of breath, without that, it's not yoga. So it manifests in external breathing out, internal breathing in, and this kumbhaka, restrain movements of breath, which hopefully I can explain a little bit more elaborately. It seems it's quite important. Let me see how I'm doing. Okay, I'll go a little bit longer. And hopefully I don't just conk out. Baya Vyantara Stamba Vritti Desha Kala Shankyabi Parijishta Yoga Shukshman. Pranayama manifests as external, internal, and restrained movements of breath. They are drawn out and subtle and according to place, time, and number. So baya means when breath is external, means breathing inward. And then external, breathing out, and internal, abhyantara, breathing in. And then this kumbhaka, where the breath is suspension, there's no breathing in or out. And it means that the breath remains within the body of the yogi. It ceases to move in and out, but those breaths remain within the body of the yogi. And that's described like so this way the breath remains inside the body and doesn't move. You don't breathe in, you don't breathe out. So that is, good. I can't out. Let me see if I can get my wits about me here. It's a very nice analogy. It remains within the body when it ceases to move in and out, like a motionless water filling a jar. So when a jar has, the water is just motionless, it fills the jar. So it's motionless, no external breathing out, there's no internal breathing. The air just, the life air is the, just stays in goodness. A little elaborate, what does it mean? Regulated by place. The commentators say that's the distance that the breath covers. So it's regulated by that, how much distance. Just like a friend of mine is, you know, there's them in Delhi, and my mind's gone blank. Anyway, it just stays steady. It doesn't move out. So desha is the area in which the breath goes. In other words, you can put a little piece of cotton like 10 yards away or something, and your breathing affects that, or 5 yards away too. What's the distance that your breath covers? That's desha. The time, the duration, the breath, and then it's also mentioned here, sankhya, the number. And of course, implied is also the intensity. Sometimes the pranayama is heavy breathing, sometimes it's mildly, middling, or sometimes it's very mild. So the external range of breath is measured by a piece of cotton or blade placed at a certain distance. So it gives certain things like that. And internally, it's measured to the bottom of the toes, where there's a, it seems according to Vyasadeva, says like the touch of an ant, something very subtle in your breathing. It can extend that. And it's kala, the time that it's restrained. How many seconds it's restrained. And they have different gradations. They have one gradation is the amount of time, matra, very short. And it even gives prescriptions how it should be divided up. For example, according to Digan Bhikshu, 12 matras are the unit used for pranayama. So, you know that verse, keep it, keep it, keep it. Lava matra, sarithanga. Lava matras are very, very small. Vyasa says, you rub your knee quickly 3 times and you clap. That's a lava matra. That's a matra. So, in the Korma Purana, mild is described as 12 mutras, middling is 24, and intense is 36. So some people can hold it for 12, some can hold it for 36. So that's there. Some commentators say that instead of just counting the numbers, we can count, you know, our mantras. The common denominator is there's some simple time system that is dedicated to yoga. And then the next thing says there's a fourth type of pranayama. So pranayama means a cessation of breath. So we first have, you breathe in, and then you hold your breath. There's a certain amount of matras, then a certain thing the person does more, he gets paid more, actually, factually. And then, I'm off to Washington. I'm really going out of consciousness now. It's really embarrassing. Okay, we'll continue. So anyway, there's a fourth type. So one type is you hold it after breathing out, then you hold it after breathing in. Then you basically stop the breathing, and it's described, it's a very interesting thing. It's described like such a good analogy. It's described like where is that? It was so nice. Emotionless water filling a jar. And now there's this fourth type that's described, chaturtha, surpasses the limits of external. So what's the difference between this third type where the inhaling and exhaling breath is going on internally? It's in a suspended state. You're not breathing in and out. And this chaturtha, this fourth state, and Joss states that the third type of suppression is brought about by a single effort, whereas the fourth takes gradual and prolonged effort. Chaturtha, in contrast, says Vigyanpyakshu, involves an extension of the cessation of breath that occurs after exhalation inhalation, that is not determined by time and number. And there are descriptions in the Shastra, and it's all the Shastra, of people who have done this, this deep sensation of breath for months or years. In yogic, Buddhic, Jain tradition, Gita, Harananda mentions that he knew of someone who could remain buried alive for 10 or 12 days as a result of his ability to restrain the breath. And even the great philosopher of modern time, Dasgupta, claimed to have witnessed a yogi remaining in a state of suspended animation for 9 days without intake of food or drink and devoid of even heartbeat. Accounts were also documented during the colonial period, such as the case of one Haridas, buried alive in 1837 in the Lahore court of Rupa Ranjit. With extensive precautions taken against fraud, all of which was determined by Sri Claude Martin Wade, the yoga tradition has long been full of accounts of yogis who have suspended their breath and been buried alive for prolonged periods and then exhumed alive, at which time they reactivated the normal breathing processes. So this fourth stage, and we have in the Bhagavatam a whole description of Dhruva Maharaj, who went to the forest and practiced pranayama, and then it's described there. Of course, he's insulted by his stepmother, that you're not fit to sit on the king's lap, that my son should be king, and he was such a kshatriya, he became insulted. And he was determined he wanted a kingdom greater than his grandfather, Lord Brahma. And he practiced this, and he ate simple fruits. In the second month, he abstained from everything except grass and leaves, consumed every 6 day. Third month, he renounced all food and drank water. Fourth month, his only sustenance inhaled air every 14 days, and then every 15 days. So this is chaturtha, this fourth type of pranayama. Very difficult. And because of that power, when Dhruvas did this, the universe felt the effect. So that's about what I have to today. Would anyone like to say, ask questions or say hello? And please excuse me again. It's jet lag hit kind of in the middle of the thing. I've been up so pretty early. Anybody like to say something? Say Hare Krishna. Say hello.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
You have a question, Gail?
I don't know if I should today.
Yeah, maybe I'll keep me up.
Yeah, I was just, first of all, welcome back. I look forward to seeing you.
Are you going to come on the 6th?
If Krishna allows, I'm hoping to.
Oh, it'd be great to see you. Yeah. A lot of people are coming.
Mm-hmm.
Even a little bit, you know, even a little far away, some people. Anyway, it looks like a lot of people are coming. It's nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to speak on Lord Chaitanya Sannyas, which is an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, one question.
I was just, I just didn't really understand the, how not breathing facilitates meditation.
Well, it's an advanced stage, and somehow one is living on the prana. It's more subtle or something. It's another metaphysical condition. I mean, it's another condition that can be understood by Sankhya metaphysics, but as far as I understand, first of all, people do it. That's what we should understand. There's already yogis that are documented that can stop breathing for 15 days or something like that. So there must be another substance besides the oxygen that can sustain one. Or the oxygen can be breathed in very deeply and kept in some kind of animated state. Kept in some type of state that nourishes the body, but you don't have this breathing in and out. So, and how is it yoga? Because just the very fact is when you breathe in and then stop the breathing, it at least initially allows the mind, and anyone can experience this, a high degree of concentration. And understanding that it's a practice then can be increased by yogic principles and the mercy of God, if you're praying to God, as it's something that can increase, this trance-like state of absorption can increase simultaneously too, your concentration. In other words, if we can extract and understand that pranayama and it, you know, helps one to concentrate, we can understand that as the practitioner gets more and more accomplished, he may choose to come into the suspension of breath period for longer periods of time. So if it's possible a shorter time, it's possible for a longer time. It just depends on the conditioning of the body.
I was wondering if it was also the fact that, like you were mentioning earlier, that, you know, the less energy that's diverted from meditation,
it's like you have the sun, it goes through a magnifying glass, it burns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way, it's somehow that life there is connected to the mind very intimately. So when that's controlled, when the prana is controlled, when the life airs are controlled, then the mind becomes peaceful and there's a much, much greater degree of concentration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Jai Maharaj, it's Rati Krishna.
Thank you, Rati. Thank you so much. Probably this would have been a class that I could have got a substitute to teach easily. But I'm going to see how the subject matter pans out also. It has to be made very practical, applied, relevant. But I think it is. Pranayama is a proven technique to help control the mind. I'm going to try it tomorrow. And then they even give prescriptions that, you know, you breathe in, that's kind of the shortest. Then you hold the breath, that's the longest. And then you exhale, that's a little bit more intense than the internal. But the flow of breathing and concentration enables one to control the mind, especially when that meditation and concentration is on the designated syllable of Om or the mantra of Hare Krishna. It allows a level of concentration. Wow. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna. Hare.
Thank you
so
much. See you soon in New Jersey.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Munchakopa to the discharge of the Sunday.